Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. For tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. Glad to have you along today. And if you just tuned in, I talked with Cynthia Richter earlier about Tattered and Mended. That's the title of her book, about if you're in a place where you feel you're broken into a thousand pieces, do not give up hope, because God is in the specialty of renewing and replenishing and restoring. If you need a message that encourages you not to give up hope in that valley of the shadow, go back and catch the podcast. It'll be up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Now I'm excited to have my good friends, Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, back on the program to talk about their new book, which they were general editors. They contributed, and they gathered some of their good friends who are marriage experts, put this book together, Ready to Wed, 12 Ways to Start a Marriage You'll Love. They were on a few weeks ago. We just barely scratched the surface of the content. So I said, you got to come back so we can kind of pick up where we left off. Now, if you're already married, I want you to know that there is content here for building a strong foundation. And even if you've been married for a long time, you might find some kind of gaps in your foundation today, and this will help you sturdy that foundation that you're building on. So you've come to the right place. If you have a heart to be married, you're about to get married, or you actually are married. So let me not waste another moment. I'm going to tell you about my guests, and we'll get them on the show. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. His books include The DNA of Relationships, The DNA of Parent and Teen Relationships, and The Wholehearted Marriage, just to name a few. His wife, Erin, is Program Director at Focus on the Family as well. She also is an author and works with her husband doing marriage intensives and seminars. Her books include Grown Up Girlfriends and Before You Plan Your Wedding, Plan Your Marriage, co-written with her husband. They live in Colorado Springs with their three beautiful daughters, Taylor, Murphy, and Annie, and their son, Garrison, who's getting huge. And you can find their influencer page on the website at myfaithradio.com. Greg and Aaron, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. As always, thanks for having us on.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Yeah, they grow when you feed them, it seems.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That is so weird.
Yes.
Garrison's going to pass you up if he hasn't already, I'm thinking.
He's right there, almost eye level.
Yeah.
I just pray that he keeps remembering that God said, if he doesn't honor me, then things won't go well for him.
Yesterday he said, Mom, I ate pizza, cookies, and Dr. Pepper. That's all I've had all day.
I think I saw him eating a Kit Kat somewhere there as well.
Oh, Kit Kat was in there too. Yep. I was like, great, Gary.
We are so health conscious in our family. It's ridiculous.
He keeps growing, so you're good.
We're vegans, so we feed him pizza and Kit Kat.
I don't think you know what that is, but anyway.
Oh. Isn't it what Spock was? Oh, there's a Vulcan. Oh, that is humiliating.
Okie dokie. So from here, I know you have an incident you need to share, and I can't wait to hear about it. But let's start with Scripture. Is there a passage of Scripture you've both been thinking about? Aaron, I want to start with you, either a life verse or just a passage you've been thinking about these days.
There's one that has come back to me time and time again this summer, and including when I was climbing Pike's Peak. It's Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. And it goes on. The entire psalm goes on that he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And the Lord watches over you. And it's just an encouragement to know that no matter where you are at, whether you are, you know, in the pit, whether you're on the top of Pike's Peak, on the highest point you've ever been, that God is there. He's watching over you. He guards your life, and he is there. He will not sleep. He will not slumber.
Mm. Such a good word, Aaron. Also, if you're in that deep valley of the shadow, the reminder to lift your eyes is so important, isn't it? Because it's so easy to have your eyes to the ground, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I constantly think that so many times when I'm feeling, you know, a little maybe jealous or something, I look and I focus up and think, you know what? God has his assignments for me. He has, you know, the plan for me, and I can't look to the left and I can't look to the right. I need to look straight on at him, and he will lead and guide.
Excellent. So good. Try to top that, Greg. Good luck.
Just sitting here thinking.
Yeah, I'm in trouble.
What do you have, Greggy?
Jesus wept is how I feel right now. No, mine is Ecclesiastes 9:9, and it says that enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your meaningless life. And I love how he throws that last part on.
He's better.
I don't have any explanation for that. But speaking of enjoying, and this is what probably, I mean, couples thinking about getting married, you know, this is one of those elements that Aaron and I just so treasure, and that's just the just have fun together and how that's such a core value of ours. And the other night, Susie, I love the way that Aaron commits to really
tormenting you.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. I was trying to think of a more honoring
there's a more honoring way to say it, that your love language is banter and practical jokes. Thus, I just try to love him consistently.
Perfect.
It's in
perfect.
This in the way that speaks love to him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I like being on the show with Susie, because she torments me in
yes,
her own
good.
Unique way as well. So we were, my sister's in town, and so my son, Garrison, my sister, they wanted to watch some sort of scary movie, you know, not like a bad one or a weird one, demonic one, but just something that would just be suspenseful enough just to have fun and just kind of scare each other. And so we were watching this. So Aaron started watching and said, yeah, I'm so tired, I'm going to go to bed. It was pretty late at night. And so she wanders off, and so just as this is getting really, really suspenseful, and you can tell we're all kind of leaning in a little bit on the couch, you know, it's a little scary, I got to tell you. I'm sitting the closest to Susie. You've been in our home, so you know, we have that little walkout basement area, and that's where the TV is. And so there's a big sliding glass door there.
Oh,
right?
My goodness.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It's wide open because my sister
Aaron.
Has a dog. So the dog is wandering in and out. So I'm right next to this thing. So we're watching, and all of a sudden Murphy, you know, our 18-year-old daughter, she goes, there's someone at the door. And so I quickly look, and all I see is this dark figure with a wool cap pulled all the way down over their head, holding this gigantic, what looks like a knife, inches from me. And so I just remember thinking, you know, the door's open. I mean, I'm just trying to process, how am I going to defend when this person can just walk?
Where's my wife when I need her?
In.
Yes.
And so the kids are screaming. You know, Garrison runs off, and all of a sudden I really look at, because I mean, this actually scared me. And all of a sudden I look at the figure, and it's just bouncing up and down, and I realize it's laughing, and then the cap
it's the
comes
wife
off,
of your youth.
Aaron.
It was the wife of his youth. And all I was holding.
So I'm trying to enjoy for the all the meaningless days of my life.
But did you feel loved?
When it flashed before me right in that moment.
Did you feel loved?
Well, after I went and changed my pants, yes. I felt very loved.
I chose to carry a pair of scissors because I was afraid if I took anything else
knife.
With me, no, I was afraid I would trip and fall in the dark
and kill yourself.
But I was laughing so hard by the time I got to the sliding glass door.
I'm trying to imagine you, Aaron. Actually, officer, this is my husband's love language.
I swear, I didn't impale her with the scissors. That was her.
Oh, my word.
So
every time you do something like this,
way.
It puts a spring in Greg's step for about a month.
Yeah.
I know. He has a great story to tell.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's all I can, it's the
and
least I can do for him.
Weakened by heart just a little bit more.
Okay, so I know others might have heard the story before, but since we're talking ready to wed, you got to tell the story of when you guys, I think you knew of each other. Maybe you hadn't met yet, but you were sleeping in class, as you typically did.
I was praying and drooling.
Drooling. And academic.
My prayer language. Some people speak in tongues. I drool.
And academic Aaron woke you up.
Woke him up.
Okay, let's take
it from
there.
In the back of Old Testament Theology at Grand Canyon University. Yes, I was wide awake taking notes and noticed this guy in front of me who I had seen around. And I shook him and woke him up in the middle of class because he was not just sleeping. He was drooling on his desk and it was going to
You're
flow
trying to help
over
him.
The desk. Yes. So I thought I would assist him in not
so
being humiliated.
Much more descriptive over the years.
Well, you don't want your drools flowing over. She was helping you. Anyway.
I have a little bit of a saliva problem. But
Okay. So you shook him. And
shook
then
him and woke him up.
Well,
and
so here she says that she's doing this to help me. And so listen to her help. So she does wake me up and mm-hmm. I was asleep. I didn't know her. So this girl behind me shakes me awake. I turn around. I'm just looking at her like, huh? And she leans in and whispers. She goes, quick, you got to stand up. And I went, what? She goes, yeah, the professor. He just called on you. I went, to do what? And she goes, he just called on you to pray. And I went, for real? Are you being serious? I don't know her. Who? Why would a stranger
would
make this up? Exactly.
Unless she was my future wife.
Yes. Unless she's a psycho. And a fun psycho.
Yeah.
And so I stood up from the back of this class because I listened to her, accepted her influence, trusted her.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to pray out loud. And,
yes, you did.
And I could sense people looking at me. So I opened my eyes and sure enough, people are pointing, laughing at me. And I don't know what's going on. I just finished praying. I sit down. The whole class is laughing at me. Then the professor goes, Greg, great prayer, but maybe next time you could let me finish lecturing before you close the class in prayer. That was her. That's how we met, literally. That was my first interaction with her.
And you said, you thought, last time you told me this story, you're like, I have got to know this girl.
I know. I mean, I figured anyone who could do that to another person, like humiliate them in that way, had to be worth marrying. Because what a fun life we would
have. See, 23 years later, I have stayed consistent through the course.
Which is a key to a strong marriage.
Yes. So I knew that I was ready to wed her when I could withstand and handle the onslaught of practical jokes that she does.
So we can say one of the reasons for the strong, stable marriage you've had over the years is consistent torment and harassment. I mean, I think that's amazing.
Could reframe that intentional pursuit of his love language.
Okie dokie, that's good.
Isn't it about time for our break?
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to unpack one of the first points that you need to know about starting marriage is you need to understand that you actually don't need your spouse and your job is to love, to not be loved. That might be some new information. We're going to unpack that when we come back. You got some questions, you can chime in 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live a Promise. Having a great time with my good friends, Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley. They've got a fantastic new book out titled Ready to Wed, 12 Ways to Start a Marriage That You'll Love. I wanted this song, Maker, to come out of this segment because I love the Maker. The Maker loves me. You have everything you need in Christ Jesus, which backs up their first point is that you need to understand that you don't, quote unquote, need your spouse. Your job is to love them and not be loved. And I know you guys have worked with thousands of couples, and this sort of ruffles feathers at times because couples often tell you, well, the reason I'm getting married is to be loved. So Greg, take it, or Aaron, take it from there if you would. And Greg, you can try to top what Aaron ever Aaron has to say. Good luck with that.
I thought you started with the song to redeem conversation.
Oh, yeah, no chance.
Anyway, we're getting to the point. Yeah. Finally, huh?
Exactly.
It's just our culture. And within our culture, there's so many myths about marriage. And one of them is that we truly believe that we need someone to complete us, someone to love us, someone, you know, that they're going to meet all of our needs and we don't even have to say anything. And especially that we need them to love us. It's like we're going to fall apart unless they fully love us the way we want to be loved. And the truth is that we have been fully, completely loved by God. And we need God. We don't need our spouse. And some people might be going, what? You know, why are we getting married then? The truth is it's awesome to have our spouse and it's awesome to go through life with our spouse, but we do not need our spouse. There's a difference.
Big distinction.
We need God.
Good word.
I liked it. And that really has been a revolutionary thought. And I heard Gary Thomas I don't even know if this was his main point, but I just heard him say that we don't need our spouse to love us because God has loved us 100%. And it just made me realize that, you know what, that is so true. That as I get my fulfillment from him, as I really experience his love, I love First John 4:11 that calls us beloved. Mm-hmm. It says, beloved, if God so loved us, then we ought to love one another. And what's so cool, beloved means much loved. So it's saying who are much loved by God. And then he reminds us again, remember, if God so loved us, then our job really is to love others. And I think that's the part we would say as you're thinking about entering into marriage, part of what you're evaluating is do I really fully embrace this idea that God has 100% met my need to be loved? And if not, you've got some work to do.
Mm. And this is really, really so important. We've talked about this. I've talked about this with both of you before, the distinction between God being a source and our spouse being a gift. And if we get that mixed up and the spouse becomes a source, we start to expect things from the spouse that they were never intended to deliver. I remember one time I was speaking at a conference doing a breakout session on that, my book, Alone in Marriage, and just talking about whatever reason you're alone in marriage, you still got to deal with what it's doing in you. You got to know first and foremost, you're the object of God's affection, even if you're feeling rejected or neglected by your spouse. And a woman came up to me after and she was sobbing and she said, I've left my husband in my heart. He knows I'm on the verge of pursuing divorce. As I'm listening to you, I am realizing he's actually a really good guy, but my expectations of him have been so impossible that I've felt so let down by him. He's been devastated by my loss of heart trying to figure out what to do. And she said, I called him during the break and I was the one to beg him for forgiveness. And I just thought, oh my goodness. And how often is this happening just because of a misplaced expectation? Mm-hmm. Love for you both to speak to that because, again, all the couples you've worked with, the idea of mixing up the idea of a spouse being a gift versus a source. Erin, what do you say?
That is so good. I love how that is said because it is, if we expect them to meet all these needs, you know, needs that they were never created to meet, needs that God only can meet, you know, even needs that, you know, maybe for me, girlfriends can meet that my husband is not created to meet. You know, we have different expectations and different relationships. And, you know, thus it's so important to know, you know, that if you're expecting things from your husband, that he simply may not be able to do that. And there's times specifically in the relationship, there's going to be seasons where he may not physically or emotionally be able to meet those needs or the expectations you have.
Like if he's passed out on the ground out of fear.
Out of fear. Yes.
You're not meeting my needs right now.
Yes. I needed you to jump up and rescue me.
Yeah. That's my lesson that I learned is that in the face of danger,
my expectation was that you would have
soiled myself.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad. You know, for me, what it's done is that it's actually caused me to really focus in on what I believe God has truly created us to do, which is to love. So if I recognize that that God is meeting my need to feel love, then what it allows me to do is to really work on, okay, so then how am I loving her? Susie, I believe that marriage is an ongoing battle against selfishness.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, the cool part is when I really embrace that, wow, is God saying in 1 John 4:11, then as he's loved me, then I ought to love others. So her, then what I really try to then learn is, well, what does that look like? And we believe, so for a couple getting married, so as you're evaluating your readiness, the question is, do you really truly understand what it looks like and means to sacrifice? And I think that's our true calling. To when we love someone, the evidence of us loving is sacrifice. See, that's the greatest thing that Jesus did for us. He died on the cross. He sacrificed. I mean, think of the verses over and over. No greater love is there than when someone lays down his life. I mean, that's John 15:13. You know, only we've talked about this before, but I think it's so cool. There's only two things that we are told to do every day in the Bible. I mean, just think about that. Only twice are we told to do something daily, to encourage one another daily and then to take up our cross daily, which is all about sacrificing. So I think if I was evaluating a young man, for example, his readiness to get married, boy, I would start with that. Are you plugged into God? Is he meeting your need to be loved? And is he fulfilling you? And then what does sacrifice look in your life? And really, we talk a lot about that, because at the end of the day, that's the key. If I'm really, truly able to sacrifice, and sacrifice means giving up something that I consider valuable, my time, comfort, whatever, money, I mean, whatever it is, to someone that I consider to be more valuable. So I consider Aaron more valuable than me, because I'm told to do that, like in 1 Peter. And so the more I sacrifice, in other words, I'm giving up something that I possess, something that I own, something that I have for her. And that, boy, if that's all you knew to do was to walk into a marriage and keep sacrificing, boy, I mean, you're probably... that's going to take you a long way.
And that really is what I feel like you're transformed into the image of Christ, Aaron. And we just have about a minute and a half before a break. But don't you feel like something is changed within you when you do that, when you mutually sacrifice and love and take up your cross, put selfishness under your feet every single day?
Absolutely, Susie. And, you know, you think about it, too, that when we are sacrificing, when we are laying our lives down, that we are transformed into the image of Christ. We so often think that it is about happiness, but really the true purpose of marriage is that he is working in and through us. And when the tough times hit, it is not wasted. He promises us that, and he is morphing us into a greater image of him. And when we go into marriage with that attitude, wow. I mean, that's a whole different stance to walk into this new relationship with. I wish we would have known that early on.
And truly, we're in a culture that sounds like a foreign language, Aaron. I mean, truly, many are not loving in that way, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, really, you think about it, the world that's not the message the world is sending us. So how would they know unless they are intentionally pursuing, you know, premarital training, wisdom from godly couples, from their pastor, from a counselor? We've got to be intentional about preparing for marriage and really laying the foundation of some healthy concepts, healthy foundation, so we can create a marriage that we truly love, because we are focusing on the truth. And that is, God is meeting my needs. God loves me, and he's going to use every challenge over the lifetime of this relationship to ultimately make me look more like him.
Excellent. Excellent. Talking to my friends, Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley. If you can chime in, if you've got a question or comment, 877-933-2484. When we come back, we're going to talk about God's purpose for marriage and why that's important that we understand it. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. We're having a great conversation with our good friends, Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, celebrating the release of their new book, Ready to Wed, 12 Ways to Start a Marriage You'll Love. And as I mentioned at the open of the show, this content isn't just for you if you're thinking about getting married, which it is great for you, or if you're about to get married, it's great for you too. But if you're already married, this content is really about building a strong foundation in marriage. And the first point we addressed, I thought you guys did just masterfully, is that you need to understand that you don't need your spouse. Your job is to love, not to focus and make sure that you are loved. And before we move on to point two, I just got to ask this. It seems like many marriages fail unnecessarily because they mix this up, you guys, where they, like, you're not loving me the way I want to, so I have an out. I maybe want to have you say a word about that, because if we have a wrong focus, then we feel justified in ending the marriage.
Oh, very much so. If I believe that Aaron is the source of fulfillment in my life, or if there's some unique aspect of love that she's withholding, then that resentment starts in, that those hearts harden. You know, I love that Matthew 19:8, where, you know, Jesus is talking about divorce and said, well, Moses permitted you to divorce because of the hardness of your heart, but that was not the way in the beginning. In when I read that, the way that I take it is that in the beginning, God created our hearts to be open. And yet these things can happen over time to where we expectations go unfulfilled, resentments build up, hurt happens, conflict, it goes unresolved. I mean, all these things, and that really leads to a hardened heart. And that's actually within the first 2 years of our marriage, as Aaron and I really were frustrated with each other. We poorly handled conflict. We reached a spot that I thought that we were done. Well, at the time, I didn't have a language to put with what I was feeling. And really, my heart had begun to harden towards my wife, that I was sort of leaving, you know, emotionally my first love. And yet, you know, boy, God used some mentors in our life, which is why we always tell a couple who's getting married, boy, go through whatever book you're reading. If you want to, you know, we love Ready to Wed, but do that with a mentor couple. You know, and Susie, I know that you and Kevin have mentored so many couples over the years, and there's just something powerful, because a mentor couple, really, God used them to save our life, to save our marriage.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if you're not just getting married, it's never too late to get a mentor couple, right, to have someone, a community, to walk with you through this marriage journey. Because I know right now we're in a marriage small group. Actually, we're in two of them right now. We're high achievers right now.
One is not good enough for me.
Yeah, it's just great to go and sit with other believers and just be authentic and to say, you know, this is what we're struggling with. And, you know, in one of them, we're watching a DVD series. And, you know, just bouncing the information off of each other. And there's something so strengthening about that. Mm-hmm. So it's never too late.
It takes a village to raise a marriage.
It really does.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, the second point is that you truly need to understand God's purpose for marriage. Oftentimes we go into marriage with our own purpose, our own agenda. And even as Christians, we really think about, wait a second here, God's the originator. And so I need to know what his purpose is. So unpack that one for us.
Do you want to go?
we both breathe.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. We're in very high altitude here in Colorado, yeah. So to talk, we need a lot of air.
7,300 to be exact. It is, again, our culture is feeding us the lie that it's about our comfort, it's about our happiness, and thus the expectation should be set. And once again, you know, stepping back and evaluating, marriage is about holiness, not happiness. I love our good friend Gary Thomas. You know, he talks a lot about that we have to be clear why we married and why we should stay faithful in marriage, because the world's going to tell us that, you know, only if our desires and needs are being fulfilled, but, you know, should we stay in it? But from God's perspective, we are to maintain our marriage because doing so brings glory to God and points others to him. And that is such a drastic difference. I love that Gary Thomas is continually redirecting the view of why get married and what is marriage about? What's the true purpose of it?
So good.
Because what's going to happen then is in those times that I'm frustrated, hurt, wounded, angry, upset, disappointed, if I understand it, that whoa, that, you know, the happiness is not the goal, but becoming more like Christ, then that gives a very different vision to those parts. I can see then God's how he's going to redeem my frustrations, my hurts, you know, within my marriage to help me become more like him. In just that alone really strengthens our commitment.
So, Greg, I would love to know how maybe some of the hardships you guys have walked through have refined you in a way. And this isn't a trick question. I really mean this. But in a way that you like yourself better because you're more like Christ in a way maybe you weren't when you came into marriage.
You know, for me, sorry, I pressed the mic block.
Yeah, you're not supposed to touch those buttons.
Why can I not? Yeah,
yes. No.
There is a note that says do not touch.
It's not a busy
box. And I tried
box.
To spank his hand away, and he did it anyway.
What's this?
Yeah, it's like my day today with children. Yes.
She slapped his hand. Anyway,
yes.
Put your hands where we can see them and answer the question.
Sit on your hands.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, probably for me, it was the whole selfishness part that I just look back and there's so many examples of just when we first got married I loved Erin and I wanted the best for her. And certainly I enjoy serving her and sacrifice. I mean, so all that was a part of it, but I just think I was very young. And therefore my faith, my walk with the Lord wasn't as mature. And I think that there just were times that it was really, really hard to get out of my own way. And that selfishness really was pervasive within our relationship. And so there's been things, choices that I've made that God has really used to grow me in that area. Hmm. And really learning what is a servant? What does that really mean? What does it look like in those moments that, you know, she wants to spend the money on this, or she wants to watch this television program, or she wants to have friends over. I mean, that was such a big battle for us. Erin, being very extroverted, loves to have people over. And so it just seems like every time we were home, there were people over. And I'm like, where do these people come from?
You know, just meet them at the grocery store during the day and, hey, come over.
I don't know those people at all. Where do they come from? And it was just, that was just a part of how Erin loved to do life, especially mm-hmm. as a single person, just always just in a group and just with people. And for me, man, the ideal, you know, way to spend an evening is just she and I just cuddled up on the couch, just kicking back, maybe watching a movie or whatever. And that became a real source of friction. And I just didn't understand that because I couldn't understand how can someone like people as much as she does. It doesn't seem humanly possible.
Well, and then I would look
Mr.
at
Counselor.
Him and think, what is wrong with him? Why doesn't he like people? Yeah. People
I
are nice, Greg.
I married a recluse who's going to build bombs up in the mountains in a cabin.
Okay. Yeah. You heard it here. Okay, Erin. We have a friend in studio. When I let her ask a question in just a sec, but I want to know if, Erin, if you could answer that. If you, looking back, how have the hardships you've walked through in marriage made you more like Christ in ways that you really treasure now?
There, as Greg was talking, I was smiling because all of what he said was true. I was going to say so much of what he said was true, but
part of what he said was true.
And I love that when it comes to being a servant, that he truly got that. And then he teaches that to our son, especially about serving and serving our family. And someday, hopefully, he will serve his own family. And for me, it was a lot of the same. I was young and my faith was very young. And as we've walked through the years of marriage, you know, just really trusting God in the difficulties and in the joyful times, really just holding them loosely to go, this is a season. This is a challenging season. This is a season of blessing. And just to hold it loosely that, you know, as in those times, whether Greg and I are seeing eye to eye or not, but just to trust God to know that he's doing something and that this is my journey, not only with Greg, but with the Lord.
Yeah.
And I love the scripture, isn't it? I think it's in Proverbs that when a man falls down, pity the man who doesn't have someone to raise him up. And really I learned very quickly in our marriage that when one of us was down, we had the other person. And I always try to focus on that when something's hard for Greg, that I have the opportunity to raise him up. When he is weak, hopefully I am strong, and that it's just such a blessing that God can do that in and through me. And I love that about marriage.
It used to scare you. It used to make you feel insecure. If I was having
weak,
a hard time.
Yeah. Mm.
And I've seen how God's really mm-hmm. grown that part of
yep.
her.
Just beautiful. I like what you say, too, about just those the hard times and the times of favor. They come and they go. Both do.
Yes.
But to hold them loosely because this is the journey. Well, we've got a friend in studio, Cara, and she has a question for the both of you. And, Cara, welcome.
Thank you. Actually, it's not a question. It's a comment. I hope that's okay.
Sure.
Buckle up, Greg.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, boy.
You know, single and married people, whenever I hear that statement, marriage isn't for happiness, it's for holiness. You know, it's kind of like this drudgery feeling like, oh, great, I wanted happiness. Now all I mean is holiness. But I think on many levels, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. So when we're walking in holiness, that's truly when we are happiest,
mm-hmm.
right? So
that's a good word.
To just, you know, isolate holiness and say, well, we're gonna have to settle for holiness. My goodness. I mean, that's what
right.
we're designed for, to lay our life down. And when we can genuinely do that, I think that's genuinely when we are the most joy-filled, happiest people. I mean, who's happy when we're self-seeking in a relationship, mm-hmm. whether mm-hmm. marriage or anything, right?
Right. Wow.
It's so true that when we are looking at our spouse as the source, I think Greg said that when we're plugging into them instead of plugging into the Lord, then really, truly, genuinely, they're going to disappoint us. And when we're plugged into the Lord, then, you know, our spouse is we don't have those expectations and it allows us to be joy-filled. But I think the differentiation is when we're not looking to our spouse to make us happy, to experience the feeling that, gosh, you know, when he does do things that make me feel happy, awesome. But there will be those times that he doesn't because he's human. And for me, it's learning that when he doesn't do that, my joy doesn't have to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
But there's times that he's going to disappoint me. He's going to hurt me. Usually not on purpose.
Usually. I don't think I ever intentionally hurt you.
But ultimately,
well, there was that one time.
When those things happen,
yeah.
You know what? I'm plugged into the right source. There's times that I do plug into him and it leads to great disappointment.
You know, Greg, I know you want to make a point and I want to make sure you do that. But just the distinction between joy, which is a weightiness versus happiness. And I think that's the thing, mm-hmm. the happy versus holy thing that there, mm-hmm. as Aaron was saying, there are times that are hard in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wouldn't say in this moment I'm happy, but the joy has a weightiness to it. So just a distinction. But go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, you know, Cara, a great question. You know, for me, I look at it this way, that I need to be very, very clear where are we heading within our marriage? I have to identify clearly where's that point on the horizon? Where are we going? And that's where I would say that I would define that as becoming more like Christ. Mm-hmm. Now, along the way, it's an amazing journey. So I would uh-huh. separate out going, I know the destination and we both want to become more like Christ, but within the journey along the way, see, there's so much joy, there's so much fun, there's so much laughter, there's good, there's pain, there's bad. I love and absolutely am passionate about the journey mm-hmm. that we're on together. And so although we know the destination, you know, we get to live out that journey that's going to be full of all that. And so I'm with you. When I first heard him say it, I was like, well, that doesn't sound very fun. If I'm not, you know, if I don't know where we're going in what really will define success for us, and success, I'm saying, as a married couple, is we become more like Christ. But to be very clear, man, this is an amazing journey,
mm-hmm.
and we get to live that out together every single day. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't know if it's going to be the up or the down, the good or the bad, the sickness or the health part. It doesn't matter. We're gonna enjoy this journey. It's so much fun to be on while we become more like Christ.
Mm. Love it.
And wouldn't it also be fair to say that all of life really is for holiness, not happiness? And we can mm-hmm. extend this idea
yes.
not just to relationships,
absolutely.
But, man,
absolutely.
Just if we look at doing the laundry, you know, driving in the car, I mean, mundane
doing
things.
The dishes
doing
is
the dishes.
Not a part
I
mean, of the
holiness. Or staring the heebie-jeebies out of your spouse.
Yes,
I mean, all
that
of
is
it.
Part of it.
It is
absolutely.
Part of it.
Yeah.
But great, great conversation. Wow, great conversation. When we come back, we're going to talk about having a bigger vision for your marriage than yourself, being committed for the long haul, and a few others as well. Don't go away. More with the Smalleys when we come back. you just need a song like that, and you need to get up and you need to dance, especially if you're in a rough patch of marriage or even a rough patch of life. Get up, dance, and say, I'm going to press on. And I think it really speaks to, Greg, the words you said before the break about having the end in mind. What are you laughing at? I was actually complimenting you. Were you not expecting
it? Well, I'm not used to that, so that was a pleasant surprise.
You choked.
So
you actually said
something. Keep going. Don't let me interrupt.
No, but that was such a good word to remember, that there's highs, there's lows, there's tough times, there's good times, but to keep that end goal in mind. Mm-hmm. And we were laughing during the break because last time we had you guys on, we were tackling these topics, and we've got literally 10 minutes left, and we got this far last time, but it's a whole different conversation.
We're consistent.
We are.
We will press on, Susie.
We will. We'll give us that much. Okay, so let's talk about being committed to lifelong marriage. That's the next point, the third trait of a marriage that we will love. What do you say?
You know, as that song was even playing, it made me think of my experience. I keep going back to hiking Pikes Peak. It's a 13.5-mile hike. It goes from about 8,000 feet to 14,110.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, and I felt every step of it. I thought I was doing something helpful for myself, like a healthy self-care thing, and I really questioned that by the time I got to the top.
When the blood was coming out of your nose and ears, then.
Yes, pretty much. But I realized at about mile 10, everybody said the last 2 miles are just treacherous. And I was like, the last 2 miles? I'm thinking the last 5 miles have been treacherous. And I realized there was no turning back. I could not turn around and walk down. It would have been 10 miles down. I had 2 miles up, or 3 miles up, or I had 10 miles back.
Wow.
Because your ride was at the very top.
Our ride was at the top.
Wow.
There was no going back. You'd have to go down these trails that were awful. And I realized that that is a lot like marriage, that we're on this path, that we've got to keep our eyes at the end, to the top, to the destination. Because along the way, there's going to be pain, there's going to be hardship, and to know that we are all in. I was 100% committed to getting to the top of that mountain. I didn't care what I had to do, and it was not pretty getting up there, but I got up there.
That's such a good picture, Erin, because so many think, I don't like what I'm feeling, and so the quickest way is out. But that visual of going back down, that was not easier, and that has been the case for many divorced couples that I've talked to who said, this wasn't easier. I was so anxious to get out of the momentary pain. I thought this quick exit would be easier, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there was no way I knew I could go down. And I can remember early on, within the first year of Greg and my marriage, that we were standing in our little Denver Seminary apartment. And I will never forget the day he looked at me and he said, let's eliminate divorce from our vocabulary, the word divorce. And honestly, at that point in our relationship, I truly was wondering, what in the world have I just gotten myself into? Because it was hard. It wasn't this, awesome. I mean, we had great times. We had fun. We laughed a lot. But there were some real challenges. And I think both of us were left wondering, did we marry the wrong person? What's wrong with him? Maybe there's something wrong with me. And, why is this not, like everybody says, their first year is this bliss? For us, it wasn't. It was challenging. And to say at that point, to commit, we are removing this word from our vocabulary because we will work through this. And it's not easy. The pain that I felt going up Pikes Peak was equivalent to the emotional pain I often felt those first couple of years.
Wow.
And there's been moments of that through it. But getting to the top and pursuing and persevering, that, it is worth it. It is worth it. And again, where are your eyes? Are they, looking at the Lord? Where does my help come from? It comes from the Lord. And we got to keep our pursuit, our eyes on the pursuit as we journey through this.
Good word. What do you say, Greg?
What was, looking back, I think what was so helpful about that is, honestly, we didn't know what we were doing. But I quickly realized, though, that we had begun to really tease and joke, sort of tongue in cheek a little bit. There was some hints of truth, though, about, well, I just don't know why you want to be married to me, or what are you saying that we should just, not be married? I mean, that kind of talk. And I tell you what, Satan is all over that kind of stuff. And he so wanted us to fail. He wants all of us to fail. And we weren't even thinking spiritual warfare, and it was happening all around us. And he attacks our mind, and he makes us believe that this is too hard, and the top is so far away, and each step is painful, like Aaron experienced going up Pike's Peak. And so we finally just said, you know, that's actually not an option. We cut that word out of our marriage vocabulary. It's like if we had a marriage dictionary of words, we literally took that out. It didn't exist. And we weren't thinking this was any real big deal. But looking back, here's what it did for me, is that it forced me, since going back away or down the mountain, since that was no longer an option, what it did accidentally for us is it caused us to work through the problems that we were going through. And if divorce isn't an option, then the only other option is to be together. I didn't want to be together in misery. And so it forced us then to work through things. And the more that we worked through things, we became more confident. We realized, wow, I mean, man, we went through this challenge and we made it. Ooh, we can, bring it on. What else can we face? And we're going to make it there. So I think over time we became confident. We came better at working through stuff. We got help. We opened our lives up to community. I mean, just little pieces began to be added to our relationship that really has made a huge difference.
You know, when you see someone who's seasoned or mature or experienced in any kind of craft, the one thing that they don't do is overreach or overcorrect. If something happens, they keep their cool and they make a necessary adjustment. And having known you guys over the years, and you're so transparent about some of the incidents and the, you know, little blips on the screen or whatever. But like, I remember one story, and I don't remember the details, but just some kind of fight you guys had. And you were having a hard day, Greg, but Aaron didn't overcorrect, overreach, where she could have gotten mad at your reaction or whatever, but she decided that it would stop with her. And I think she wrote a note and put it in your lunchbox or something like that. But to me, that's just such a sign of maturity, because you're not overreaching, overcorrecting. And you've come this far, 20 plus years, and now you're still standing. And I just feel like young marriages and old marriages need to hear from people who've been down the road, because Aaron, you said it so well, it's just holding some of those things loosely, going, this stuff happens, because younger people go, this isn't supposed to happen, and then they overreach and overcorrect. We just have a moment before I ask you to pray, but Aaron, I want you to say what it was like to get to the top of that hill and make that parallel to somebody running the race and finishing it in regards to marriage.
Yeah, I can't even tell you what it was like to get. And the interesting thing, I was with my 14-year-old son, Garrison, and he was way up ahead of me. I mean, he's like half a mile ahead. But when I got to where I could see him, he stood there and waited for me, because he didn't want to go over the summit without me. And it's just like marriage, that, you know, how exciting that we persevere through the pain, through the trials. And, you know, it wasn't, the last 3 miles were the worst. And, you know, but then we get to summit together. We get to finish well, that you get to go over that cliff together. And there were people everywhere, because it's a tourist attraction, and they're looking at us. They had no idea what we'd just been through. You know, isn't that the case, that someday we will arrive in heaven and there's going to be just a community of saints there waiting for us, cheering us on and saying, you know, well done.
Beautiful. This was just powerful. I actually think we got farther last time than we did this time. But I feel like what we said was totally different this hour, and was so, it was just gold. It was so good. Greg, would you pray for that person listening today who's maybe their marriage is hanging on by a thread? Would you pray that they would get a fresh vision for what God has for them?
Lord, just continue to reveal that spot on the horizon, Lord. What is marriage really about? And give us a renewed, a refreshed vision that it really is about becoming like you, and that you are, the promise is that you will use every circumstance in our life to help us to become more like you. You promised that in Romans. Lord, just give us that vision that we can fight through the discouragement, the disappointment of our marriage, seeing that it really is going to be something that we use for our benefit. Lord, help us to fight for one another, to fight for our marriage, God. And thank you for inhabiting even the smallest details of our marriage. You're present, Lord. Guard us against the evil one who wants to destroy our relationship, God. We love you, Lord. Turn our marriage into this amazing thing that you created, God. We ask these things in your precious name. Amen.
Amen. You know, you too, I want to thank you for not giving up and for being an example. Just love you both so much.
Thank you. We love you too.
Yes, we sure do.
Look forward to having you guys back on next time. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find this podcast up on our website, myfaithradio.com. I would say share this with every married friend that you know. Title of the book, again, is Ready to Wed, 12 Ways to Start a Marriage You Will Love. God bless you, and we'll meet you back here next time.